Genug vom täglichen Grind? Spiele Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und grinde, als wär's 2002. Ein legendäres Remake der Originalspiele mit neuen Parks, krasseren Tricks, plattformübergreifendem Multiplayer und abgefahrenen neuen Spielmodi. Hol dir das neue Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und zeig der Welt, der Shred stirbt nie. Jetzt vorbestellen auf tonyhawkthegame.com/playnow. Verfügbar ab dem 11. Juli.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamers' official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me today, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, how are you doing?
We're back from E3. We are rested. We are refreshed. We have lots to discuss. Lots of RPG news. And oh my gosh, a new RPG even came out this week. It's called Ever Oasis. And I played it. I reviewed it. I'm going to be talking about it on the podcast. A couple RPGs from old hands. The director of Secret of Mana, of course, worked on Ever Oasis. But also, we're going to have some news from the Hironobu Sakaguchi front. And as always, we will have our comments from the readers. So I suppose, like, we should probably just jump right in. Because, I don't know, we don't have any, like, cute small talk to be making or something.
I think it probably got all sucked out of you after E3, all the small talk.
Yeah, tell you the truth, I'm still a little, I'm feeling a little, you know, frazzled after E3. Like, same. I'm just kind of getting back into the swing of things. Like, the week after E3 is always a little kind of slow, I suppose.
Yeah, it always feels a little bit unreal.
Yeah. And also, right after E3, I went to the Burning Desert in Las Vegas for 3 days and jumped around a whole bunch.
That's right.
Yes. And from like 11 p.m. until 6 in the morning, like 3 days in a row. So
how in God's name did you get energy to do that?
Well, there's a secret recipe. It's called sleeping drugs beforehand and lots of caffeine.
Okay, that's passable.
Also, ibuprofen for my feet, but
Yeah, you need the ibuprofen.
But it was a good time. I had a good time. The only thing that is a super drag about EDC, which is what I went to, is the traffic. The traffic is the worst. Because you're literally like sitting in traffic for like 2 hours to get to the Las Vegas Speedway. And I only got to the strip like twice. But I digress. We are looking ahead to a long summer, but we have some RPGs. But we're going to start with RPG news. And the first bit of news is that Hironobu Sakaguchi, creator of Final Fantasy, has announced not one, but two new games, both in his Terra universe, a universe that he is trying to kind of turn into a new Final Fantasy. He has said that, he said that he wants to make 9 games. Coincidentally, he was around, like, as far as Sakaguchi is concerned, there were 9 Final Fantasies, 1 through 9. And he, as far as he's concerned, Final Fantasy 9 was it. Like, yeah, that was his swan song with the series. And after that, nothing else happened, you know.
It all just kind of, like, went into a big hole and died.
He's like a lot of fans in that regard, actually. The ones who seem to refuse to acknowledge anything that happened after Final Fantasy 9. But, all right. Nadia, weirdly enough, you played the original Terra Battle. So, share your thoughts, please.
Well, I played Terra Battle back when I was doing a lot of mobile writing, and you know what? It was a good game. It wasn't a traditional RPG by any means. It's been so long since I played it because it was on my phone, and that phone died, and I lost the data. And you know,
it was
how
like
it goes.
A puzzle game or something with microtransactions.
Yeah, if you're going to compare it to anything, strangely enough, a good comparison is Puzzle and Dragons, where you kind of take your player piece and you knock around other pieces, and it's actually highly satisfying to play, except the artwork is really, really nicely done. I think Amano worked on it.
Yes, Amano contributed like key art, and like when he was doing his big like announcement for Terra Battle, like he had like this video that I will never forget, because he was like, And now I'm like bringing in my buddies. And it was obvious that like we were having a beer. And I was like, whoa, wait, here, let me get a video of you like holding up a beer and saying, let's go Terra battle. Oh, and by the way, like if we hit a certain milestone, will you like make some key art for it or something? Yes? Awesome.
Good stuff. Now, it was a, as I recall, too, like, each character had, like, a complex background written for them. It was, in a way, it was very Western, in terms of the RPGs, because you had, like, the different classes and, like, the different descriptors of every class, and it had gorgeous music. It was just a really interesting game, and talking about it now, I do want to go back and play it again, and I am very interested in playing the second one.
Mm.
There was, of course, a gacha system.
Of course there was.
Of course there's going to be, yeah.
Because it's an RPG, it's a Japanese mobile game. It's always going to have a gacha system.
Yeah, and it was kind of nonsense, but they all are. But overall, it was a fun game, and it was very unique, and it was very interesting. But you and I were talking about how we kind of want to see Sakaguchi go back to console games at least part-time.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually like to see, I don't know how it would work since it has like the whole free-to-play gacha thing, but I wouldn't mind seeing the Terra Battle games on the Switch. Because it has a touchscreen, you can do it no problem.
I mean, Terra Battle? I don't know, it's a little too mobile. Terra Battle 2, on the other hand, appears to be kind of a tactics game. Like, they're changing it up a little bit. It seems to be quite a bit more elaborate this time around.
Did they say if it was free to play yet?
Yeah, it's going to be the same as before. It's going to be free to play with microtransactions.
Hmm.
Yeah. Mm. So, I don't know, like... There is this game, Terra, the other one.
Terra World, I think.
No, Terra World is the... Oh, no. Yeah, no. Terra Battle 2 and...
Terra World.
Terra Wars? Terra Wars. That was
Terra something with a W.
Yes. Terra World is like the franchise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Terra Wars.
Damn it, Sakaguchi.
Terra Wars is the other game, which we don't know about.
Right, we don't know anything about that one yet.
Now, when I talked to Sakaguchi last year at Bits Summit, he said he was working on a game.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was a console game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is intriguing. And like he has said in the past, I am working on a console game. Or it turns out that Terra Battle 2 is a CyberConnect game. So what is going on with Terra Wars? What is Terra Wars? Please, God, let it be... something other than a mobile puzzle game.
I really hope it is because a lot of people don't know it, of course, because they never played Terra Battle, but it's a very interesting world. Like, you can tell Sakaguchi really put a lot of thought into this world and its characters and its gods and its warriors. So I remember being
Tell me about the world.
What's that?
Tell me about the world.
That's the problem. I can't remember. It's been so long since...
It's such an interesting world that I don't remember anything about it.
It's been years. I just remember, like, God, it had something to do with, like, gods and mortals. Jeez. And it was interesting.
I suppose so.
Definitely worth revisiting, put it that way.
That's one thing with Sakaguchi. He does put a fair amount of thought into his settings, which I think is why they resonate so much with people, is that, you know, they want to be in this world. If anything, Final Fantasy has become a caricature of itself, and it's always kind of bothered me, actually. And this is not a new rant for us, but if there's one thing that Final Fantasy XII drove home, which Matsuno is kind of like Sakaguchi in that he has a very clear sense of what his settings are. Like, Final Fantasy XII has a very clear setting and a very clear aesthetic.
Whereas very well developed.
13 and 15, not... like, it's just this mishmash of elements.
Yeah, let's just
really
smash
bothers
things together.
Me. I mean, it's like, here are a bunch of... Here are a bunch of over-designed characters, and this guy's wearing, like, Gucci outfit, but this guy's wearing a suit of armor, and, like, it doesn't make any dang sense. Like, one moment, you'll have a medieval castle, but then they'll be, like, at a 50s diner... It's worse than Star Wars Episode 2 when they walked into Dexter Jetster's diner and for some reason it's the 1950s. And you're like, what? Why?
Maybe he was just.
And it's all because George Lucas wanted to pay homage to his movie American Graffiti from the 70s. He's like, oh,
that'd
be fun. Yeah, that's solely
what a dork.
Why they did that. It was like, oh, let's put a 50s diner in here, whatever. It's an homage to one of my older movies.
With 15, I can kind of believe it because you have the whole walled kingdom and the kind of ruined world outside of it. Like, that's mm-hmm. fine. But 13, I felt was really too obsessed with being so pretty and so complex that it kind of forgot to make it a livable, interesting world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, how many faux French words do you need? How many apostrophes do you need, people? If you're going to write fantasy, you don't need apostrophes. You really don't.
Yeah, there was a certain point where especially the terminology in Final Fantasy 13 stopped making any dang sense. But
it just stopped real quick.
So, in that regard, like, I don't particularly care about the Terra universe at the moment, but that's because I didn't play Terra Battle. And give me a proper RPG set in that universe, and I think I would play it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would like it.
I think Sakaguchi can still make a good RPG.
Yeah.
He showed that in a number of RPGs that followed after Final Fantasy. Blue Dragon tends to be kind of maligned, but a lot of people think that Lost Odyssey is a secret, one of the secret best RPGs or secret best games period on the Xbox 360, for example.
Mm-hmm. And Never got to play that. I have Blue Dragon, but I haven't played it. I just know it had that song by Jack Black.
Did
the,
it?
The boss theme. It was like the best worst thing in history.
Oh my gosh. I just remember Blue Dragon, like the line to see it in 2006. That was literally the most the Japanese people have cared about the Xbox 360 ever. Or the Xbox period.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it Xbox or Xbox 360? I can't remember.
That was the Xbox 360.
Okay, yeah.
And it was a big deal because Microsoft was like, This time around, we are making a big push for Japan, and the first thing they did was sign an exclusive deal with Mistwalker, and they also signed a deal with Bandai Namco and got Tales of Vesperia on it as a timed exclusive.
Right. So they tried. They really, really did try, but
got Last Remnant on there, like some Square games, and then of course the bombshell was that Final Fantasy 13, they nabbed Final Fantasy 13 for the Xbox 360, but then Final Fantasy 13 A wasn't that great, and B was actually inferior in the 360 compared to the PS3. The PS3 got a big win over the 360.
Yeah, but it was funny to see all the young people like feeling so betrayed over the fact that Square Enix was making a game for the Xbox 360. I was like, oh, children, let me tell you about Super Nintendo and PlayStation 1. You think you know betrayal? You don't know anything.
I just remember Shane Bettenhausen's Megaton bombshell announcement. Advent Children's Blu-ray will contain a demo for Final Fantasy 13. And everybody was just like, Megaton, huh? Megaton.
That was such a bad movie.
Working one up yours circa 2008. R.I.P. All right. Mistwalker continues to do well. Hey, Terra Battle. It seems to have made Sakaguchi a lot of money. He's happy. But
he's happy he's still making it.
People are playing that game, but maybe the rest of us would like something other than a microtransaction-driven puzzle
game. Have you ever
game.
Seen the Mega 64 skit with Sakaguchi?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious. You gotta look it up. It's where he basically tries to get himself fired from Square Enix, and he, every time, this is literally him. They got him to play himself. And every time he comes across a crazy-ass idea, it gets more money for Square Enix. So they're like, well, you're doing great. And finally, when the Spirits Within comes out, it bombs. And they're like, are you Sakaguchi? Yeah, you're out of here. And so he's like, all right, I can finally pursue my dream. And he becomes the rap master or something crazy like that. It's pretty great. You got to look it up.
Spirits Within. Oh my gosh. Change the course of history.
That was also a bad movie. What is it with Final Fantasy and bad movies?
Yeah.
Like, I have to ask.
I saw it in theaters.
One good thing, though, about Advent Children is, this is the Japanese version only. It had an ending song with Gerard Way sang it.
Okay.
My Chemical Romance. I'm a fan, I'm sorry.
I didn't get to the end of Advent Children because it bored me so much.
I don't blame you. It was so boring. I remember a friend of mine who I worked with at the time was like, I didn't understand a damn thing that was going on in that movie.
Because it didn't make any sense. A harbinger of things to come in Final Fantasy.
That's exactly it. Oh, God, it only got worse.
All right. Pillars of Eternity is going to be on console.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is cool, I suppose. I was asking about this a few years ago, and they're like, maybe eventually. But no, it is officially going on consoles, where it will be joining that other game, Torment Tides of Numenera, which is, kind of similar, or at least in the similar vein. Both are isometric RPGs. I have sung the praises of Pillars of Eternity in the past.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's pretty good. Like, is it perfect? No, I think they could have done better work with the Stronghold in particular. As for whether it will work very well on console, I guess we'll see. It's a very PC-centric game.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. As I recall playing Torment, wasn't it very mouse-heavy control?
Somewhat, yes. So the way it works is when a battle starts, you pause and you give directions and everything, and then things play out in real time. And every character has a ton of abilities, so it's going to use like literally every button on the controller, like face pad and that kind of thing. So
it's not
unreasonable to be able to put this game. It's just going to be kind of unwieldy.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have the option.
It is good to have the option, and I appreciate that it's going to get out to more people. It's going to have a broader audience, especially with Pillars of Eternity 2 currently in the works. The DLC was pretty solid. So, and I assume the console version will include all of that. So,
yeah, I was wondering about
that. So people who missed out on Pillars of Eternity the first time, they will be able to play it on console. One other note, Final Fantasy XIV is out now. Stormblood is out. It's called Stormblood, right?
Yes. It is Stormblood, yes.
Can you tell that I'm still kind of like out of it after
E3?
I'm like, what is this game, Stormbrewed?
Stormbrew? Is this about coffee?
Stormbrew. I drink
that. That's actually a good promotional tie-in.
You know, don't count Square Enix out from selling something like that in their official store.
Oh God, no.
Circa, 2006, when Final Fantasy XII came out, they were selling those damn potions. Do you remember the potions?
Oh, I have a friend who drank that, and she kind of like blogged about it, and she said it was the worst thing she tasted in her life.
I remember Shane Bentenhausen, once again, another call out. I think he drank that on a dare, maybe?
It tastes like rust and nails.
I mean, I had one for years, and I was afraid to even open it at a certain point, because the vapors might kill me. They might take me out. Ugh.
I have a Super Mario energy drink in the back of my fridge, and I'm just terrified to touch.
A Super Mario energy drink?
Yeah. It's, I don't know, made out of mushrooms or some shit. I don't know.
Made out of mushrooms?
No, it's not. It probably just tastes like counterfeit Red Bull like the rest of them do.
It tastes like burning. Did you? You had Super Mario cereal back in the day, right?
I did not.
What? It was real gross. It was one of the grossest things I've ever had.
The thing with Canada is we have kind of stricter regulations on our cereals. And even cereals that we do have, that America has, are very different. Like, Corn Pops here are freaking nasty, and Fruity Pebbles are freaking nasty. And I never hear the end of it from American husband about how bad they are. But yeah, we never had. A lot of commercial cereals didn't quite make it here.
As usual, Canada does things worse than America. News at 11.
But I do remember the jingle. Nintendo is a cereal. Wow. Is that the one?
Yes. Maybe. I don't know. I just remember that it had Mario and Zelda. And the Mario cereal was so bad. I think it was kind of like a cherry flavoring. Like an artificial cherry flavoring, like cough syrup, but in cereal form.
Ew.
Like, it was uneatable. It was inedible. Uneatable.
It looked like dead boogers.
Ugh. And then the Zelda one, of course, like, I didn't know anything about Zelda. So I was like, I don't want to eat this cereal. I don't know anything about Zelda. I was a very picky child. I don't know much about Zelda. Therefore, I do not want to eat the cereal. But I ate the cereal.
I do not want to eat the moblins.
But that was a digression. Anyway, Final Fantasy XIV Stormblood is now out, and we will be talking about it, but here was the problem. Final Fantasy XIV, like a period when we could theoretically be reviewing it, was during E3 time.
Yeah, good job. That was great.
So yeah, that was the thing. And our primary MMORPG aficionado, Mike Williams, was on the show floor with us. So he was not really able to tackle it until he got back. He is currently playing it. He should have the impressions up by the time this podcast goes up. And then we will have a fuller review next week.
Was he even able to connect?
I don't know. There was it was undergoing a denial of service attack last I checked. It was not good.
Yeah, and even before that, it just was not logging on. My Twitter was full of people just complaining about how they couldn't get in.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Same old, same old.
Same old, same old for any MMORPG that you've ever played. Yeah. My one experience with a expansion launch for an MMORPG, I think, was World of Warcraft when they introduced the Worgens. And I remember, like, 5 zillion, like, people who were wearing, like, regular clothes in the Worgen starting zone, standing around all of the quest objectives, waiting for them to spawn so that they could hit them and then, like, start in. And I'm like, come on! I need to kill the monsters, too, so that it can get to the next objective. Oh, my God. Ugh.
That's hilarious.
MMORPGs are the worst.
They're so dumb, but so great.
Yeah, but I keep being told that Final Fantasy XIV is the most amazing story. And I need to get to it. I'm like, oh my gosh, please. I'm like, look, I'm paying my respects. I literally have a subscription and I'm not playing.
So do I. Like, I renewed my subscription and I downloaded the update. And
this is why, by the way, Blizzard has literally, like, billions of dollars. Because millions upon millions of subscribers just don't cancel their accounts and they just keep getting money. Blizzard's like, cha-ching, thank you. Like, even now, multi-million people have subscriptions to World of Warcraft. It's insane.
They say, I should get back into it, and then they never do.
Yeah, I had a World of Warcraft subscription for like a solid year, and I didn't play at all.
Who did you play as? What race?
I don't know. I never really found like a character that I particularly liked. I started several games and always got bored before I got very far.
I always wanted to play as a Tauren.
Oh, yeah, that would have been fun. Like, I started an orc character. I wanted to play as an orc, but I wasn't impressed by the Stark orc starting zone. I think the furthest I ever got, really, was as a Wargan. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what the Wargan are. Are they the...
They're the wolves. They're the werewolves.
That's right. What, warg? What the... Yeah, of course.
Because they put... because Blizzard wanted to appeal to the furries.
Of course. Well, not just the furries, but at that point, was Twilight a big thing? Because that would be it, too.
Oh, I don't know. Probably. I'm sure there's some overlap between Twihards and World of Warcraft players, sure.
I love werewolves too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me too. Werewolves cool. Versus vampires, werewolves. Every time.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite characters from Darkstalkers was the wolf.
Oh, John Talbang?
Oh man, you even remember his name? Good job.
I do. I like him, I like Saberwolf.
Yeah, but he was never featured as heavily as some of the other characters, namely the succubus Morgan or the vampire or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was always, he was always kind of in the background despite being awesome.
Yeah, Morgan, of course, is kind of front and center.
Yes.
Tatas.
All right. So, so Stormblood, we will be talking about it next week. Where we'll be having a special guest. Phil Kohler is going to be joining us next week.
Oh, really? Oh, that sounds awesome.
To be talking about Stormblood and sharing all of his thoughts as an MMORPG aficionado. So please look forward to that. Okay, last bit of news. Bandai Namco announced earlier this week that .hack is getting a remaster for the PlayStation 4 and I think the PC. This is not the .hack that came out in 2002. This is the .hack that came out afterward. .hack GU, Volume 1, 2, and 3, Rebirth, Reminisce, and Redemption. How very Evangelion of those titles.
Those are the real three R's, not yes. The whole reading, writing, arithmetic thing.
Of course, .hack is primarily best known for being a kind of long-winded, extended... very mediocre series of RPGs that started in 2002 and is now 15 years old, by the way.
Wow.
Jeez. Yeah, can you believe those? And they had like 4 games that came out on the PlayStation 2, like within the course of like a year. It was actually
That's
pretty
crazy.
Amazing. Yeah, no, they just like pumped them out. That was the equivalent of doing essentially Hitman, the Hitman remaster, but you know, where they were putting out a different episode each time with a whole different setting in each place and then eventually collecting them. But this was, you know, the days before, long before downloadable games. And they were putting it out as, you know, like full price standalone games, which was actually kind of crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't know if you get away with that in this day and age.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, like, I'm trying to think of instances where people are putting out full price package, like, series of games. It was a bold experiment, and this was a thing that Bandai Namco was doing in general back then. They also did this with Xenosaga.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so Xenosaga, the game that gave us Cosmos, or is it Cosmos?
Cosmos.
The Android?
To this day, I don't know.
Yes.
The Android with the boobies.
A game, Xenosaga, a series that was originally supposed to be like five games that would continue all the way into the PlayStation 3 era, which is kind of crazy to me in hindsight. And maybe Bandai Namco realized that it was crazy as well, because they ended up kind of cutting it short after three games.
Wrap it up, boys.
Wrap it up. Just get this thing finished. We're not going to continue into the next generation. Jeez, jeez, crazy. But .hack 2002, I mean, it mostly stood out because MMORPGs were a new and novel thing back in 2002, and still relatively new and novel. In fact, this was pre-World of Warcraft, interestingly enough.
By like 2003, the first MMORPG, that first MMORPG I played was Ragnarok Online, and that was around 2003.
Yes.
So that was definitely before Warcraft.
Yes, EverQuest was still kind of owning it. This was when people were still hyping up the first Star Wars MMORPG, which, MMORPG nuts will tell you that Star Wars, like the first Star Wars from 2003, was good. It wasn't. It was not a good game. It was insane. It did insane things. It was kind of fascinating in that regard. I mean, you could be like a dancer on a forbidden planet somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Dancing to who? The stars?
But most of the time, you were jumping around sand dunes chasing rats.
Oh boy, that sounds exciting.
Yes. And I had the Jump to Light Speed expansion, which almost enticed me in. But I digress. So yes, .hack was wanted to be an MMORPG. It was like it was based on an anime where you, I guess the characters went inside the game and were kind of existing in this world, and like things were happening to the world, to the network, to the database, and that kind of thing. Like it's being, you know, reflected in the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That whole era was very, there was so much like quote unquote cyberspace stuff going on. Like Mega Man Battle Network was kind of the same idea, where you would like have the whole like inside the network and you had to fight viruses. And it was very, very, I guess a very positive look at the future.
Yes. I remember feeling a little overwhelmed by .hack when it came out.
Yeah, same here.
A whole bunch of them came out at like once, like in 2002. And like I saw them on shelves and I was just like, oh my god, there's too many games, I can't do it.
That, and by then the fan base was very not really insular, but very, the whole fandom was very thick, hard to penetrate, if you excuse my sexual language.
I was very poor at the time as well.
Yeah, that didn't help.
Yes.
I was very poor at the same time.
I had to be very judicious with the monies that I spent, and I was much more keen on buying Soul Calibur 2 than I was on buying, you know, a series of PlayStation 2 RPGs. Also, I didn't own a PS2.
Me neither.
But so it goes. Actually, so yeah, like, .hack ended up getting kind of middling reviews from critics, but it has a fan base. Lots of people really enjoy it. On the other hand, Legend of Dragoon also has a fan base. So
does it seriously have a fan base?
Oh, God, yes. It totally has a fan base.
Oh my gosh. I never played that game, but just looking at it from the outside, it's just one of those games where I just kind of put my chin in my hand and look at it and just wonder about it.
Nobody has really been able to adequately explain to me why it has a fan base, but it totally has one. And the best I've been able to gather is that kids who grew up playing that game back in the day, like really enjoyed it and really remember it, you know, nostalgia glasses. One of the nostalgia goggles are on thick. And I suspect that might be the case for .hack, or at least the fans of the games really enjoyed it. Now, the remaster is not based on the 2002 games, as I think I mentioned. It is based on .hack GU, which came out several years later, looked considerably better, had upgrades to the battle system, and was arguably, like, say, more mature. But it also came out in 2006, which meant that it really flew under the radar, because by that time, next-gen consoles had already come out, and people were moving on from the PlayStation 2. In fact, I remember in early 2007, everybody was declaring the PlayStation 2 to be dead, that God of War 2 was the final, like, major release for that thing.
And how long did that system persist?
Oh, I mean, it persisted for several more years in Japan.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, in Japan it was huge for a long time.
Yeah, so a lot of people are happy, I suppose, because this is a new opportunity to experience games that might have flown under the radar, and .hack GU is maybe superior to the original games. I guess I'll give them a shot, but I'm not really feeling this one. I'd be interested for people to kind of explain to me, like, what is it about .hack that they really like? And why do you think, like, myself and the audience should kind of give it a shot as an RPGs go?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Yes. But in the meantime...
my ears are open.
In the meantime, it's going to be in 1080p. It's going to be widescreen and all that. And it sounds like they're collecting all of the games into one.
Yeah.
Which is wise of them.
It's so very wise.
That's nice, because then you won't have to buy them separately.
Yeah. Not a bad move.
You sound really thrilled, Nadi.
I'm so thrilled about this game. Like, I am just falling off my chair here.
Oh my gosh.
Although I did experience a little bit of .hack in Project Cross Zone.
Oh, did you?
And when I was in that part, I was like, yeah, that's great. Where's Mega Man X and Zero?
Everybody made it to Project Cross Zone.
What's that?
Everybody made it to Project Cross Zone.
Oh, they did it. That's what made it such a fun, cracked out game. It was just off the wall. It was hilarious.
I suppose, like, if all you care about is essentially reading fan fiction, it can be pretty fun.
Oh, it is, like, just 100%. Like, it reminds me of when I was in grade 7 and some kid wrote a fan fiction about, like, someone killed Hulk Hogan's grandmother, so all these, like, cartoon characters got together to avenge her.
What?
And you had, like, Pac-Man and Mario and Mega Man, who died fighting Megavolt from Darkwing Duck, and...
Like you?
And the moral of the story at the end was, don't kill someone's grandmother or this will happen, because the world essentially blew up.
Essentially blew up?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That actually sounds kind of like a great coked out fanfic starring a lot of different characters.
It very much was. And like I mentioned last week, like the whole scene with like Yakuza and just like, there's a certain kind of, I felt like I was on some really weird drugs the whole time I played. Like, I haven't played the original, but I played 2, and it was just a gas. I mean, the gameplay itself is okay. It's not great. It's fun, but the battles drag on for a long time. But just the story bits in between was just great.
Project Cross Zone, the thing that I liked the most about it was that it had 2D representations of a lot of different characters. Like, it had the Valkyria Chronicles crew. It had the people from Resonance of Fate, I think, because Sega was like, yes, we're in this, and we'll just throw some characters in here or something. I don't know.
These guys.
Yeah, these Resonance of Fate guys or something. We'll just toss in Valkyria Chronicles. It's all good. So, I didn't care for the battle system, which was very repetitive.
Just a bit.
Just a little bit. Just much like Super Robot Wars Endless Frontier, which was terrible. That was not a good game. I did not like it. But regardless, I digress. .hack, it's coming out at some point. It's being remastered. So .hack fans, you can rejoice.
It's on its way.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Endless Oasis, Nadia. Mm-hmm. So, interesting game.
It looks really cute.
It is so cute. Oh my god. It is the cutest game. So it's by the director of Secret of Mana.
Which is a score with me.
A person who's worked on many of the Mana games. And it is being published by Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So and it's coming out today as of the publication of this podcast. And that's why it stood out to me was that, you know, not a ton of RPGs right now. And Nintendo, like, it has a really great pedigree. So I decided mm-hmm. to give a shot. I ended up reviewing it. You can read the review over on the site. I ended up giving it a 3.5 out of 5. And, yeah, I liked it, though. Like, it was soothing.
Yeah, and that's okay with me.
Yeah, I found it very relaxing to play.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you familiar with the basic premise, Nadia?
Something about how the world is a desert and you kind of forge an oasis in the middle of it all, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that is the basic premise. So it opens, like, you're on in an oasis with your brother, but then chaos shows up and kills everybody. Okay. And in a last-ditch effort, your brother puts you, like, in a little, I don't know, kind of like the Superman ball from the Superman movie, and sends you away, like you're being sent away from Krypton. And you're sent into the desert, and you meet this water nymph, and this water nymph is, like, very sad, because she's like, oh, that's it. I mean, I just, like, there's nothing else. I can't create a new oasis. Like, the world is dead. But then you show up, and it was like, oh, cool, hi.
Want to help me rebuild the world?
And she is, like, almost this big sister type figure. Mm-hmm. Like, you have slumber parties, you're staying up, and you're, like, talking all night. And of course, your character is a silent protagonist, so they don't say anything. He or she does not say anything, but it was very, very cute, like, where they would kind of, like, hang out at night and, like, talk, I suppose. Or I suppose the water nymph would share her cares or pour her worries into this vessel that was the protagonist. And the protagonist, of course, just... you know, smiles and nods, but, like, nods in this, like, super cupid doll like way, like, ugh. Like, her head, like, just goes, it's, like, that is her reaction to everything. And I don't know why, but it really just, I was like, oh, God, this cute overload, stop.
I should definitely give it a try.
You would like it, I think.
Yeah, I think I would. And it sounds like a good post-E3 game.
So,
relaxing.
I went in not knowing much about it. I was actually kind of expecting something like Animal Crossing.
Oh, really? No. It was more like, I've heard it compared to, what is that? Fantasy Life? Yeah.
Yeah, Fantasy Life, I guess. I suppose. So the basic premise is that you create this oasis with this water nymph, and people start wandering in, these travelers, and... If you do what the traveler wants or fulfill some kind of story goal, you will join to them with them and build a bloom booth, which is a little shop.
Aww.
And they sell things to these little penguin, like these little pigeon guys who also come into the town. And they don't talk. They just come in and buy things. They're the ultimate consumer.
The pigeon people.
The pigeon people. They come in and they buy the things. And so... They're coming in and buying things, and you have to periodically restock the shops. And that's really, I mean, there's some other stuff that happens with the town, but that's really about the extent of what you do there. So
yeah, I got the impression from your review that it's a great basis for a game, and it does a lot of things right, but it could probably stand to be a little deeper.
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me about the town is that it's really kind of there to gate your progress. So it's like, oh, like, you can explore this one area once you get this one townsfolk, and that's only going to happen once you fulfill certain requirements, which will cause them to show up or whatever.
Right.
There's a part in the game where you need to host a festival. And how do you host a festival? You need to get, like, 10 stamps. How do you get 10 stamps? You got to get them from the shopkeepers. And the way you get a stamp from a shopkeeper is that they have to sell a certain number of items. And once they sell a certain number of items, they will give you a stamp.
So they kind of validate your parking.
Pretty much, yeah. So that can, you know, it's a little time consuming, to be honest. And it's at that point that the game kind of grinds to a halt a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so in that regard, the town is kind of there to serve as a reflection of how you are growing as a character.
Right. Is it a long RPG, or is it kind of on the short side?
It's mid-length. It's not that long, but, you know. It's,
well, after Persona 5,
it's not Persona 5. Put it that way.
I think I'm ready for something under 100 hours.
It's definitely 100, under 100 hours. But,
okay.
So the core of the game is you go into the world, and your goal basically is to continue to grow your town, I guess, by finding these kind of like these treasures, like these luminous mm-hmm. things that will help restore light to the world and defeat chaos. Because you start to build up your oasis, and immediately these chaos plans show up. And you're like, oh no, chaos plans. They're messing everything up. They're sucking the life.
Weed killer.
They're sucking the life out of the sand and all that stuff. And
oh,
like,
no, the life in the sand.
If you're not careful, like pretty soon the town will just be kind of devoured, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to venture out into the world and look for help. And at a certain point, you can start bringing townsfolk. And the core of the game is it's a dungeon crawler. And you're solving these like kind of simple little puzzles where like one character, like for example, can turn into a ball. They can go into a tunnel. They can open up a door. Right. Another character can kind of leverage stones away, and then the person in the ball can like bounce off it and in interesting ways. Like the puzzles don't usually go more than a couple steps,
mm-hmm.
but it's fun. It's all right. Like it's competently executed. Same goes for the combat. Like the combat is like this rock, paper, scissors kind of like weakness thing. Like some characters are stronger against certain enemies mm-hmm. than others, but most of the time you can run up and just kind of beat them over the head until they're dead.
I got a stick and you're dead now.
Yeah, no,
the character designs looked really cute.
They are so, really cute. I like the I cannot remember any of their names. There's like kind of the lizard girl, and then there are the little cutie doll cool. characters, and then there's like a big guy with a hammer. I seriously cannot remember any of their names because like they just aren't that consequential, I suppose. Like, you mm-hmm. see them wandering around your town, that kind of thing. And you can say hi to them and nod at them and things like that. But, like, the relationships aren't very strong in this game, except, right. I'd say, between the main character and the water nymph.
So, it is very much, like, Secret of Mana, but, like, the first Secret of Mana game had, like, a bond between the characters. But then, like, subsequent games kind of lessened that story and bond in favor of more gameplay. So a little bit in between, I guess, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, the bonds aren't very strong, like, at all, for the most part. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mentioned how the town was kind of being used as a way to, you know, it's like a way to illustrate your progress and a way to gate your progress. Really, and then the other thing is, like, as you like collect more items, you can craft things. Mm-hmm. So you can like craft an improved sword, or you can craft
good old crafting.
Craft an improved armor, like that kind of thing. So and you need to do that, and you need to get droplets, like water droplets, which are earned by selling things in the booths. In the way that you get the way you collect your money is that you literally throw like a whirlwind at the shops, and they like all the money comes like pops out and like goes into your wallet.
Tax time.
Pretty much. It's like, oh, congratulations, I'm making all of the money. Gimme. You wanna live here? You wanna live in this oasis? Pay up.
Communism.
Yeah, it's more like the mafia.
It'd be a real shame if something happened to your nice booth.
Yes, exactly. It's like, well, yeah, I'm protecting you. Like there's chaos out there. It's chaotic. You want to be able to keep your shop? Well, all right, pay up. It's 100% tax. Wow, this game's darker than I was thinking.
Yeah, it sounds like it. On the surface, there's something below there.
There's a day-night cycle, fairly inconsequential one. It's mostly just to be like, okay, during the day, you're like out exploring, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then at night, you go to sleep, and then you start all over again. And mm-hmm. often, like, you're waiting for things to happen, like, I think one of my problems with the game is that when you're waiting for things to happen, like things really grind to a halt because there's not a lot to do when you're waiting. Like, you can go out and can kind of explore and kill some things and collect more stuff, but you collect so much naturally that in some respects, like you always have enough to restock all of the booths, like
mm-hmm.
just by the monsters that you kill and the things that you grab as you're wandering around in the world. So there's not a lot of impetus to go out and just wander.
Yeah.
I did. I wandered around. I went into different caves. A lot of the caves are gated. Like, you can't, like, you can't progress until you have the right character or, like, some, the right story mode, like, story event happens or something like that. In fact, a lot of it, in that regard, Everoasis is actually quite a straightforward game, like, more straightforward than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe it would have made it a different kind of game, but I kind of wanted the town to play a greater role in things.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. So it definitely sounds like, I understand why I gave it a 3.5, but it still sounds like the kind of, 3.5, people think, oh my god, it's trash, because that's the industry we're in.
Well, that's stupid. But, no, it's a good game.
Yeah, but it sounds like a really good game, and I'll definitely want to support it, because who knows, maybe the next one will be a little bit deeper, a little bit better, you know?
Yeah, it's polished, it's cute, it's competently executed, like the battle system is fine. I like the character designs and the art for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
The town aspect of it works just fine in the role that it's designed for. It's kind of limited role, I suppose.
Yeah.
There's a crafting system, which is okay. Like, the puzzles are pretty good. I think that if they had been able to take it a bit further, like, it could have been really special, to be honest. Yeah. But as it is, it's a nice little snack.
A nice snack. A nice light snack, like coffee crisp.
That said, I like one idea that it has. I like the idea of the town illustrating your progress. Like, I'm a big fan in general of player housing in games.
You're pro housing, like your Fallout 4 settlement.
I am crazy for player housing. I am crazy for my doll houses or whatever. And I would like to see that aspect of the game taken by another game and just continue to expand. I remember Bravely Default had something to that effect, where, like, you had a town that you can kind of grow.
Yeah, you would go back to, shoot, I can't remember the main character's name, but you would go back and rebuild his town, and you would get rewards for rebuilding it. And they had the same thing in End Layer as well, where you rebuilt the moon.
Yes, I liked that.
Yeah.
It wasn't as closely, like, intertwined, as it were, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it always felt like it was kind of off to the side, where, like, the town in Everoasis is front and center.
Yeah.
A lot of people were comparing it to Fantasy Life. Did you play Fantasy Life?
I did, yes.
Jeremy loved Fantasy Life.
Yeah, Fantasy Life was a lot of fun. I never finished it, because it's a very kind of in-depth game. But I think that was a little more intense in terms of combat, though, because you had all these different classes you could learn stuff from, and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it might be a little different, but the aesthetics definitely remind me of Fantasy Life.
What's the structure of Fantasy Life exactly? I never got around to playing that one.
Well, if I'm recalling correctly, there was a central town. I don't remember if you built anything up in it, but there was a central town, and you could apprentice yourself to learn new jobs. Like, you could do everything from, like, cooking to being a ranger to... I think I was, like, a ranger, and I, like, you know, was friends with animals and stuff like that. But, it was a very... It was one of those games that's very Japanese, but also very Western in its structure, because it was very much based around quests and jobs and stuff like that. There was a story, as I recall.
Very grindy.
It was very, very grindy.
Yes, that's the thing. It's like, do you want a very cohesive, like, story, or do you want to grind all the time?
Exactly.
I don't know why there can't be a happier medium here, but whatevs.
It's against the law.
But Everoasis really seems to go in the other direction. It's like a very straightforward, very linear, like, very purposeful game where you're just, like, moving straight ahead. Your town is... You are building your town. As your town grows, you get more powerful, you get more characters, etc. The characters have special abilities. Like, you can take them out. Like, some of them can mine, some of them can dig, some of them can access new areas, etc. So, yeah. Everoasis. Yeah, you should definitely play it. I recommend it.
Yeah, it's out, as we're recording this,
it's out now.
Is it out now?
It's out, it's out as your people who are listening to it are listening to this.
Oh, yes.
On the Nintendo 3DS.
But we're living in the past.
We are living in the past. All right, so let's wrap up a little bit with comments from the Peanut Gallery, the people who are listening to this podcast. Last week, we ended up talking a fair amount about Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and of course, Writer Kicker says, I have not gotten through like 10% of Xenoblade Chronicles, mostly because I was using an unsavory method to play it. Gasp. and it made my Wii go weird, so I gave up on it. I have got to hunt down the 3DS version, though I regret not buying it ASAP, as I have bought plenty of games at launch. From what I played, I appreciate the localization and reminded me of the work on Dragon Quest VIII, but that whole system was a bit confusing for me, as it seemed most of the stuff was automatic. I really liked how Quest didn't require me to go back to the poster like in other games, and I laughed my butt off in random encounters since the party ended up sounding like hooligans.
They did. They kind of had, especially Ryan. He had that really like low class British accent. It's Ryan time.
Am I crazy? Is Xenoblade Chronicles on Wii U's Virtual Console? Because that's what Tetragamatron is saying.
Is it?
I remember like that was a thing that we wanted it to be out on the American Virtual Console, but I couldn't remember if it ever made it.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention, so I don't know for sure.
Hmm. In any case, if it is, you should go get it, because it's really good. So he also says, I really dig the Xenoblade battle system, but it took a lot of tinkering and reading online to understand it. Try playing as everyone, try every new art you get. Not everything is useful, but you'll find some of the combos they yield are. The quests that pay off automatically are the generic quests. They're abridged, more involved quests in every area. Chronicles X, man, I went back and forth on that game. Opening was strong, exploration was great, but the story seemed all over the place. I ended up liking X a lot when it started treating it as a science fiction anthology with a bunch of different stories happening in the same place, the same viewpoint character. The main story was pretty much non-existent, but the character stories and the beefier side quest chains were shockingly good. And
go back to that sometime.
For what it's worth, I would count Xenoblade 1 as one of the best JRPGs up there. Right up there with Chrono Trigger. Ooh, strong words.
Those are strong words, but I won't fight very hard to rebuke them.
Kuni Nino says, actually, Kat, the comparison to Avatar for Anthem was spot on. Of course, we were talking about Avatar, and we were being kind of unfair to Avatar, maybe, or just kind of mean to it.
Well, it sucks.
But Kuni Nino says, that's how it felt like to me, too, and I would consider that a compliment. Avatar is not a bad movie. Sure, you can shoot it down for having mediocre plot and banal characters, but that's not where the strength of the film was. It was praised for its tech and the incredible world Cameron managed to craft. And, you know, Kuni Nino proceeds to talk about how great and detailed and amazing Pandora is, and like how you totally buy the biosphere, and finishes and says it's a really cool film, very well thought on, beautifully crafted. There aren't many movies that look like it.
Well, that's true, but that's the thing that bothered me about the movie, just from an outsider's perspective, was how just unrealistically evolved everything was. Like, why the hell did the horses have six legs? Why did a horse need six legs?
No, they gave some thought to it. Like, why is everything big? Because of the lower gravity, that kind of thing.
Why are they cats? Why do they have sex with their hair? I don't know.
Why are they cats? The answer is because it's cute.
They're weird looking. They're not cute.
They are cute. They like specifically went to Disney and were like using all of the character creation techniques where they like gave them the big eyes and that kind of thing and made them like super sexy. So like you were like, oh yeah, cat, alien cat thing. Dances with Smurfs. Kunino also reminds us that Treehouse devoted an entire segment to a playable demo that was like 40 minutes and went on depth on the mechanics in the open world. So you should check that out. It's probably on YouTube.
Yeah, I think I had it running in the background during E3, but I was working on other stuff. But yeah, they definitely went in depth into what's going on.
Ralik is here to inform me that Destiny is a shooter. Thank you, Ralik.
All right, we cleared that up for this week.
I don't mean to be like dismissive, but and they end up going on to talk about how, by the same token, and based on what we've shown in terms of gameplay, Anthem feels like a progression of the more and more shooter-heavy feel of Mass Effect. So yeah, maybe I'm wrong, and there's plenty of role-playing stuff to do in Anthem, and it won't leave you shooting stuff in the face 90% of its playtime, but I don't think so either. I mean, how much in terms of classes, customization, skills, etc. would a Call of Duty game have to offer before we start referring to it as an RPG? That's a scary thought, in my honest opinion.
Yeah, just a bit.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Like, yeah, other genres have borrowed elements of role-playing games.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, it's the eye test. You look at a game and you go, yeah, no, this is definitely an MMORPG, or this is definitely an RPG. Destiny is a shooter bolted on top of an MMORPG. It's a co-op shooter that, like, heavily borrows those elements. And I would not be shocked if Anthem is pretty much the same thing. Like, it has lots of loots and different rarity of the loots. And also you shoot things, but you're in a power suit.
Yes.
That's kind of cool.
You have a hit point.
I don't know.
Yeah, the power suits are kind of cool.
But yeah, no, it's... We've had this conversation way too many freaking times, and I'm not having it.
Let's have it again.
Let's have it again. So, let's see. One last thing. This is from Hulu. Following up on the Earthbound Mother 4 hack, the game is called Unearthed now, and it's being worked on by a Toronto-based Canadian. Hey, maybe Nadia can bring the guy in when the game is finally finished. That'd be a nice change of pace.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, talking about hacks. Yes, RPG hacks. That would be an interesting episode, perhaps, because, I mean, there's a pretty dedicated community out there to creating their own kind of fan hacks. By the way, did you know that RPG Maker Fest is out on the 3DS?
Yeah, I saw that in the review schedule, and I've never played an RPG Maker... Well, I played an RPG Maker game, but I've never used RPG Maker, because believe it or not, I'm not that interested in the development side of gaming.
What?
I've never had the desire to make my own games.
That's weird.
I've written a couple... But I've never really wanted to.
We should make an Axe of the Blood God RPG.
What the hell would that even be? Kat and Nadia go out on an adventure.
I mean, I'd be kind of interested to try it. It'd be a two-person party, like get all of the U.S. gamer staff in there. We would need a good boss. I think Parrish would be a good boss. Or like, Parrish should be like the mysterious like wanderer. Who
yeah,
like periodically pops up and you're like, who are you?
I don't know if he's noticed, but like every time I summed up his stuff at the end of the week, like when I do the wrap up for the end of the week, I've always referred to him in like some kind of like with some kind of title. Like I think in the last one I called him the Kieran of games journalism.
All right, I would be interested to try and make an RPG with a 2-person party.
That would be God. I don't know if I've ever played a game with a. I'm trying to think of a good one with a 2-person party. It's been so long.
Yeah, I'm like I can't think of anything off the top of my head. A two-person turn-based party game would be kind of fun to try. So maybe I'll pick it up and take a crack at making a thing.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to make a game journalism game, a game about being a game journalist, which is just the most self-indulgent thing. But there have been games about being a game developer. There have been games about being a cook. I can't think of many games about being a journalist. Like Beyond Good and Evil was a game about being a journalist,
but not a game journalist.
You're a photographer.
Yeah.
No, like, I always imagined, like, I remember, like, I developed a kind of a simulation game, kind of like Game Dev Story, where, like, you, like, start up the office and, like, you're assigning out, like, features. And one of the first things you have to do is, like, basically decide, do you want, how are you going to spend your time? Like, how are you going to spend your pool of resources? You can spend it on, like, quicker hit stuff, or you can spend it on the more prestige stuff. And, if you, like, don't put enough time into the prestige stuff, your prestige will drop. People will, like, not like your site. Like, they'll start calling you clickbait and that kind of thing. But if you put too much into the prestige stuff, then you'll never get any articles out. And so...
And then your best writer dies because they don't have life health insurance.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. This is all getting a little too real. Like... there's a good game about being a game journalist in there somewhere. And then, of course, like figuring out how to distribute like reviews or it could be a little dry. But if you turned it into like an RPG kind of thing, kind of like Brave Yamada. Did you ever see that one?
Oh, that sounds really familiar. Is that's not the one with Sega, is it?
It ended up getting localized here. It's the one with the guy in the underpants who's stalking the girl. Yes, he's totally a stalker. Dandy Dungeon?
I think I remember that now.
The one where the game developer is making a game and his real life is being dramatized in this game through like various levels and that kind of thing. That could be a fun, like if you could turn like a game journalism game into that.
Yeah, if it had some fun writing, I could see it being like pretty good.
Podcasting the game.
Trying to get cats off your lap.
It could That's be like, podcasting. There was a Penny Arcade comic long, long, long ago where, like, Gabe was complaining that he didn't have a game for the thing that he was good at. Like, and then he was like, Photoshop Hero.
I remember that.
Yes. So, yeah, there you go. Last thing is from MattCom26. Nadia is perfect.
Aw, that's sweet.
For a Canadian.
But I'm not perfect. My body is broken and useless.
And with that, Axe of Blood God is the US Gamer Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are sold. Please do me a favor, leave us a review on Stitcher so that we can get on the charts. So we really appreciate it. Thank you. Also, please really like leave it. Reviews on iTunes. If you're enjoying the show, give us a positive review. The more positive reviews we get, the more visible we are, and the more people will hopefully download our show. Many ways to connect to us. Find us on Twitter and Facebook. For US GamerNet, please give us a like on Facebook. We really appreciate it. And then you will be able to follow all of our really spectacularly weird things that I let Nadia post on that Facebook page. What did you post today, Nadia?
What's that?
What did you post today, Nadia?
Well, I was actually looking over my old Pokemon Go account, and I realized I named all my Pokemon after tragically hip songs. And so I took a screenshot of, like, my Growlithe named, like, 38 years old. And but I post whatever is, like, funny or crazy or interesting. Sometimes I just do something as generic as, like, an old ad from, like, about the TurboGrafx-16. And one I recently posted was, it was an ad for the TurboGrafx-16 and the CD add-on, except they clearly did not know what to make of this add-on that was $400. So the description was, plays all CDs.
Oh yeah, that's gosh.
$400. That's worth it.
So yes, we have a lot of retro stuff. I posted like the recipes for a drink recently, like gaming themed drinks. Yes.
Yes, I never drank them.
Retro gaming magazine alerts, all kinds of things. But of course, also our regular content so that you can keep up with us. But anyway, yes, follow our Twitter and our Facebook. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at @the_catbot and Nadia at @NadiaOxford. And oh yeah, read our blog, Tiny Girl, Tiny Games. Next week, we'll be back and we'll be talking about Stormblood, which, we have experts here talking about the Stormbloods, and we'll be able to share their thoughts on that. We're going to be talking about a little game that is coming out. It's called Valkyria Revolution, PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation Vita. You'll be able to hear all of my thoughts on that. And believe me, I have thoughts.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yes. You will find out what my thoughts are. Are they good? Are they bad? I guess can you maintain the, like, can you wait even a single week for more Blood God? Well, you're going to have to because we're wrapping up now. And with that, for Nani and myself, thanks for listening. We'll be back next time. And until then, happy adventuring.